has awakened in consciousness by the mercy of Krishna. And he is able to see the Lord lying actually on Anantashesh in the waters of devastation. And he is seeing the Lord, as we'll hear later, with his eyes closed or just opening. Because when Brahma takes his birth from the navel, from the lotus coming from the navel of Lord Vishnu, it is the time for the creation to begin. That means that the living entities have been asleep, practically speaking, asleep within the body of Lord Garbhadaksha Vishnu. And they are coming out, and they are ready to be engaged in activities as they were previously. So the first living entity who makes the facility, who is created, who makes the facility for the other living entities within the material world is Lord Brahma. So therefore he is the firstborn. He is the self-swayambhu. He is self-born in the sense that he is born without any mother, just from the father, from the navel, from the lotus of the navel of the father. So he began to offer prayers after seeing the Lord, after performing austerities for 1,000 of his years, which is indeterminably long. He was so overjoyed to see the Lord. He had been infused with the potency and desire to create. And then he saw the Lord and glorified his form. And then he felt sadness. Why? Because the living entities could not see Krishna. And therefore they suffer so much. Therefore he wishes to create the material world so that the living entities can regain their actual consciousness, their actual Krishna consciousness, their natural consciousness. Because that is the ultimate purpose of the material world, so that the living entities can perfect their sadhana and rise from the platform of being conditioned souls to being pure souls. So Brahma mentions the sadness of the living entities and how he wishes to help them. And then he explains the practical process that everyone becomes purified and meets the Lord. Is this tam bhakti yoga paribhavata vitsaroja asheshuta chete patunana natta pungsan. How the Lord enters the heart in one sense, although he is in everyone's heart. He enters through the pathway of the ears and sits down in the purified heart, which is compared to a lotus of the living entity. So the 12th verse, and many of the other verses up to 19 or so, they talk about how Krishna or the Lord can be perceived in this material world. What ways can he be perceived? And before that, Lord Brahma speaks of the different ways that living entities act within this world, and how that's basically the verses up from 12, 13, 14, and 15, or especially the 12, 13, and 14. How the different ways the living entities relate to the Lord. In 12, Brahma talks about three different types of living entities. How the demigods, how they act in relationship to Krishna, how the non-devotees act, and how Krishna reciprocates with both of them, and how the difference between those reciprocations and the reciprocations of the devotees themselves. And then in 13, Brahma describes the situation of those who perform Vedic rituals, pious activities, and how those pious activities are perfected when those results are offered to Krishna. This is not devotional service, but yet It is beneficial for the living entities, it is said. And then in 14, how Krishna, the situation of the of those who worship the impersonal, and there's some very interesting purports in these regards. So we'll go for these verses one by one. And then in 15, it describes incarnations, because this is how the Lord can actually be perceived in the material world. And then 16, that the Lord is the root of the material world, because he can be perceived as the source of everything within the material world, because nothing exists. Everything that exists is based upon him, in the same way that the entirety of the existence of the tree is based on the root of the tree, gains its sustenance. Everything gains its sustenance from the root. And then in 17, the time factor, which is also Krishna, is described. And then 18, Brahma himself, this creator, the prime living entity in the material world, and the creator, his relationship with Krishna. And then something more on incarnations in 19. And then in 20 through 25, Brahma starts making a request. Now, Brahma's request is for the ability to create the material world, but in such a way that pride does not disturb him. He asks the same thing as we heard in the end of the second canto in chapter 9. He asks, please, allow me to create, show me how to create in such a way that I will not become proud. Because as soon as one does anything in this material world, one becomes proud, even though in fact one cannot do anything in this world without Krishna empowering the living entity to do it. Because we are so tiny and insignificant. We can't do anything. We're like little children. They want something, and it's really up to their parents, and they try to get it, but their parents fulfill their desires and allow them to do something. So similarly, that is our situation. If Krishna withdraws potency, we can do nothing. We can accomplish nothing. We can't even breathe. We can't see. We can't move one finger. But the illusory energy is so powerful that we think, oh, I am very wonderful. So Brahma says, look what I'm going to be doing. How will I be protected from pride? I'm going to be creating the universe with all its complexities, dealing with so many living entities. I wish to do this in your service, but I need your protection and blessing so that I will not become proud. And Prabhupada, in his purport to one of those verses, gives us instructions, expresses the danger of us too becoming proud, even as aspirant devotees, and explains how we can actually be protected. So there are basically three topics in this remaining part of Brahma's prayers, showing how the different living entities deal, different categories of living entities go in this world, and Krishna's relationship to each of them, the devotees, the non-devotees, those who perform pious activities, the demigods, the impersonalists, and how Krishna deals with them. And then how Krishna really is, Brahma is appreciating how it is Krishna who's going to be the root of the material world. It's going to be Krishna who is the time factor that crushes and cuts everything. And he is the one who is being worshipped ultimately by the impersonalists. And there's some very interesting purports in these parts. And then finally, how he is incarnations and their purposes. And then finally, Brahma makes his request after glorifying Krishna in all these different ways. So, we heard how the Lord deals with his pure devotees, how he enters their heart and he sits there. We know how when Krishna entered within the womb of Devaki from the mind of Vasudev, how she began. She was so effulgent and beautiful that Kamsa, when he saw her, he recognized that the Lord must be within her at this point, because she was so effulgent. So similarly, when a devotee somehow or another attracts Krishna to sit within his lotus pure heart, the devotee becomes so wonderful too. Then he's actually a devotee. So we heard about that. So Krishna is attracted to the devotees and comes and sits in their heart. But how does he deal with others? So text 12. My Lord, Brahma says, you are not very much satisfied by the worship of the demigods, who arrange for your worship very pompously. What does pompously mean? Gorgeously. Pomp and show with great opulence and wealth. But that isn't, it's not satisfying to Krishna, Brahma says, with various paraphernalia. And why isn't that so satisfying? Because they are full of material hankerings. So there is the element of business in their dealings. Here, please accept this wonderful, they don't say pompous offering, this wonderful opulent offering, we are giving this to you, may you be pleased with it. But there are requests that remain either spoken or unspoken within their hearts for material things. So that's one dealing. There's one, the devotee, the sakam devotee, demigod with material desires, he's worshipping the Lord. But the Lord is not so pleased. Second, you are situated in everyone's heart as the supersoul just to show your causeless mercy. And you are the eternal well-wisher, but you are unavailable for the non-devotees. So here's another dealing. So Krishna does not neglect the non-devotees and does not enter into their hearts. He's there in their hearts because savasya chaham riddhi sanavisto mata smittim gyanam aponam cha ishwara savabhutanam riddhishe arjuna tishtiti. He is the bharta bhokta upadrashtano manta. He's the overseer, the permitter. He gives knowledge, he gives remembrance, he awards forgetfulness. We think forgetfulness is bad, but just imagine if we remembered every bad thing that we've done for the last 20 billion years all at once. So forgetfulness is very good. That's Krishna's mercy. Well, how about we don't like to forget all the things we have to do that we haven't yet done. But just imagine if all the things that we were supposed to do and didn't do, we remembered those all at once, all the things that we had to do for the last 40 billion years. Just imagine the size of our list. And all at once, oh, what anxiety. So Krishna, even though he awards this forgetfulness and remembrance and helps the living entity transfer from body to body, still he is unavailable. Samoham savabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya. He is unavailable for the non-devotees. And Prabhupada's purport in this is very nice. The demigods and the celestial heavenly planets, who are appointed administrators of the material affairs, are also devotees of the Lord. But at the same time, They have desires for material opulences and sense gratification. The Lord is so kind that He awards them all sorts of material happiness, more than they can desire. But He is not satisfied with them because they are not pure devotees. Patram pushpam param doyam yumam bhakti pratsati taraham bhakti paritam asnami paritamana. If a pure devotee offers Krishna a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, the Lord will accept it because it is bhakti that is pleasing to the Lord. The Lord does not want any one of His innumerable sons, the living entities, to remain in the material world of threefold miseries, to perpetually suffer the material pangs of birth, death, old age and disease. The demigods and the heavenly planets and many devotees on this planet also want to remain in the material world as devotees of the Lord and take advantage of material happiness. They do so at the risk of falling down to a lower status of existence. And this makes the Lord dissatisfied with them. Pure devotees are not desirous of any material enjoyment, nor are they averse to it. They are not against it. They don't desire it. What do they want? They just want to please Krishna. They completely dovetail their desires with the desires of the Lord and perform nothing on their personal account. Arjuna is a good example on his own sentiment due to family affection. Arjuna did not want to fight. But finally, after hearing Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he agreed to fight in the interests of the Lord. Therefore, the Lord is very much satisfied with pure devotees because they do not act for sense gratification, but only in terms of the Lord's desire. As Paramatma, a super soul, He is situated in everyone's heart, always giving everyone the chance of good counsel. Thus, everyone should take the opportunity and render transcendental loving service to Him, wholly and solely. The non-devotees, however, so that was the demigods who are Sakham devotees, devotees with desires, and then the pure devotees. Now how about the non-devotees? The non-devotees, however, are neither like the demigods, nor like the pure devotees, but are averse against the transcendental relationship with the Lord. They have revolted against the Lord and must perpetually undergo the reactions of their own activities. Bhagavad Gita 4.1 states, Yeya tam mam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham. Although the Lord is equally kind to every living being, the living beings, for their own part, are able to please the Lord to either a greater or lesser extent. The demigods are called Sakam devotees, or devotees with material desires in mind, while the pure devotees are called Nishkam devotees because they have no desires for their personal interest. The Sakam devotees are self-interested because they do not think of others, and therefore they are not able to satisfy the Lord perfectly, whereas the pure devotees take the missionary responsibility of turning non-devotees into devotees. And they are therefore able to satisfy the Lord more than the demigods. The Lord is unmindful of the non-devotees, although He is sitting within everyone's heart as well-wisher and super-soul. However, He also gives them the chance to receive His mercy through His pure devotees who are engaged in missionary activities. Sometimes the Lord Himself descends for missionary activities, as He did in the form of Lord Chaitanya. But mostly He sends His bona fide representatives, and thus He shows His causeless mercy towards the non-devotees. The Lord is so satisfied with His pure devotees that He wants to give them the credit for missionary success, although He could do the work personally. This is the sign of His satisfaction with His pure Nishkam devotees compared to the Sakam devotees. But by such transcendental activities, the Lord simultaneously becomes free from the charge of partiality and exhibits His pleasure with the devotees. So that particular topic is discussed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the beginning of his book, Madhurya Kadambini. He allows the devotees to be partial and save living entities. Now a question arises. If the Lord is sitting in the hearts of non-devotees, why are they not moved to become devotees? It may be answered that the stubborn non-devotees are like the barren land or alkaline field where no agricultural activities can be successful. As part and parcel of the Lord, every living entity has a minute quantity of independence. And by misuse of this minute independence, the non-devotees commit offense after offense to both the Lord and His pure devotees engaged in missionary work. As a result of such acts, they become as barren as an alkaline field where there is no strength to produce. So a very powerful purport where Prabhupada explains these three and how they deal with the Lord and the Lord's reciprocal dealing with them. The pure devotee, the Sakam devotee, the one with material desires, and the non-devotee. Now, how does he deal with others? So there's some more others described. But the pious activities of the people, such as performance of Vedic rituals, charity, austere penances, and transcendental service, performed with a view to worship you and satisfy you by offering you the fruit of results, are also beneficial. Such acts in religion never go in vain. So this means that one, because Krishna says in the Vedas that you perform this activity and this pious activity and that pious activity. So on the authority of Krishna doing that, when one performs those activities and offers the results, may you be pleased by this, O Lord, then Krishna is pleased with that as well. But that type of pleasure isn't the same type of pleasure that the Lord experiences when the devotee fully surrenders to Him and serves Him. This is much more indirect. But yet it's beneficial. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, anything done on the account of the Lord is a permanent asset and accumulates in the form of unseen piety for gradual promotion to the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord. So this is also described in the Bhagavad Gita, yatta pravitabhutanam yena savamidam tatam, that the living entities, chattavanam mayashishtam gunakarma vabhagasa, the living entities are in different orders of life, different varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, and they perform their activities, and when they perform their activities for Krishna's pleasure and offer Him the results, they are just on the verge of bhakti in that way. So these undetected pious activities will one day result in full-fledged devotional service by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, any pious act done on account of the Supreme Lord is also recommended here for those who are not pure devotees. So a fourth type of person is described and how Krishna gradually will elevate this type of pious person who performs the proper religious activities and offers the results to Krishna. Now here's another type of person, the impersonalist. Let me offer my obeisances, says Lord Brahma, unto the Supreme Transcendence, who is eternally distinguished by His internal potency. Now, this verse and purport is quite interesting. His indistinguishable, impersonal feature is realized by intelligence for self-realization. I offer my obeisances unto him who, by his pastimes, enjoys the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. So the Lord himself in the spiritual world, Krishna, is enjoying pastimes, rasa, and the word is used in the verse, rasa, with his internal energy. Rasa means, what does rasa mean? Who's rasa vigraha? The form of the sweet, mellow taste that is experienced, blissful experience when Krishna deals with the in love with his devotees, that is rasa. So Krishna enjoys that rasa within the internal energy, and within the external energy, it's not that he doesn't enjoy, but the external energy is manifest through his energy is all-pervadingly there. So his external energy is manifest in an impersonal way, and also in a personal way through the Paramatma. And the non-devotee impersonalists, through their intelligence, realize how Krishna is all-pervading through his energy. They don't want to get involved in material rasa, material relationships, so therefore they prefer the impersonal. But in rejecting material rasa, they don't taste the spiritual rasa in relationship with Krishna. Here is Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Lord is eternally distinguished from the living entities by his internal potency. Although he is also understood in his impersonal feature by self-realized intelligence. Devotees of the Lord, therefore, offer all respectful obeisances unto the impersonal feature of the Lord. The word rasa is significant here. Rasa is significant here. The word rasa, the rasa dance is performed by Lord Krishna in the company of the cowherd damsels in Vrindavan. And the personality of Godhead, Gabadakshaya Vishnu, is also engaged in rasa enjoyment with his external potency, by which he creates, maintains, and dissolves the entire material manifestation. Indirectly, Lord Brahma offers his respectful obeisances unto Lord Krishna, who is factually ever engaged in rasa enjoyment with the gopis, as confirmed in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad in the following words. Pardante so buddhyatta gopiveshu me purusha prustad avir babhuva. The distinction between the Lord and the living entity is definitely experienced when there is sufficient intelligence to understand his internal potency, as distinguished from the external potency by which he makes possible the material manifestation. So the impersonalists also deal with Krishna. And he allows them to deal with him. But Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, they don't know, they don't have realization that Krishna is the source of that impersonal. So they don't deal with Krishna, and therefore they miss out on the spiritual rasa of the internal energy of the spiritual world of Vrindavan. Now, the emphasis of Brahma's prayers changes a bit. Let me take shelter of the lotus feet of him whose incarnations, qualities, and activities are mysterious imitations of worldly affairs. One who invokes his transcendental names, even unconsciously, at the time he quits this life, is certainly washed immediately of the sins of many, many births and attains him without fail. So Prabhupada explains in his purport that the leelas or activities of the different incarnations, especially Krishna's incarnation, because that is Krishna's incarnation, he performed Naralila, or leela that, or activities, pastimes that is so similar to the activities that ordinary people perform in the material world. Now, when Krishna does that, performs his activities, he is just like an actor on stage. An actor imitates the activities of a king on stage, although actually he is not the king. Similarly, when the Lord incarnates, he imitates parts with which he has nothing to do. In Bhagavad Gita it is said the Lord has nothing to do with the activity in which he is supposedly engaged. Namam kamani lampanti name kama pale spriha. The Lord is omnipotent. Simply by his will, he can perform anything and everything. When the Lord appeared as Lord Krishna, he played the part of the son of Yasoda and Nanda, and he lifted the Govardhan hill, although lifting a hill is not his concern. He can lift millions of Govardhan hills by his simple desire. He does not need to lift it with his hand, but he imitates the ordinary living entity by this lifting. And at the same time, he exhibits his supernatural power. Thus, his name is chanted as the lifter of Govardhan Hill, or Sri Govardhanandari. Therefore, his acts in his incarnations and his partiality to the devotees are all imitations only, just like the stage makeup of an expert dramatical player. His acts in that capacity, however, are all omnipotent. And, now here comes the point of what was mentioned in the purport. His activities are also wonderful and all-powerful, that the remembrance of such activities of the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is as powerful as the Lord himself. Ajmil remembered the holy name of the Lord, Narayan, by merely calling the name of his son, Narayan. And that gave him a complete opportunity to achieve the highest perfection of life. So Krishna so kindly incarnates himself to give, to perform so many activities, to give the living entities, and then he has names according to those activities. Madhava, Shyamasunda, Giridhari, Giribharadhari. What other names? Gopal, Keshava, Govinda, Sahasra Sarup. Yes, he performs universal form, Vishwarup. Performs so many activities, he's called Banki Bihari. Yes? Yes? So many names, so many activities. So that we can remember his names and thereby, either consciously or unconsciously, we can say his names and remember him and remember his pastimes and become absorbed in him instead of being absorbed in the material world. So that is his kindness. So that's how we can see Krishna, even though we're in the material world. By his incarnations. Text. And just by remembering him, chanting his name even unconsciously when one quits this world, one attains him without fail. Saratan Bhava Bharata. Your lordship is the prime root of the tree of the planetary system. This tree has grown by first penetrating the material nature in three trunks, as me, Lord Brahma, Shiva, and you, the Almighty, for creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And we have grown with many branches. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you, the tree of the cosmic manifestation. So he is that tree, the prime root of the tree, and he is the tree of the cosmic manifestation. And even Brahma, Shiva, and Lord Vishnu are all his avatars. So everything in this world is actually none different from Krishna. Krishna is the source. 17. More glorification of Brahma. People in general all engage in foolish acts, not in the really beneficial activities enunciated directly by you for their guidance. As long as their tendency for foolish work remains powerful, all their plans in the struggle for existence will be cut to pieces. What? So people in this world engage in so many activities, day after day, night after night, week after week, month after month, year after year, but everything will be cut to pieces because they are not engaging in activities that are ultimately beneficial for them. What is the force that cuts everything to pieces ultimately? That is Krishna in the form of Kala. Kalosmin lokachaya krit. He destroys, crushes everything. So that time factor is so powerful in this world. It is the ruler of this world, the crushing ruler. So in its purport, Prabhupada explains what is beneficial for the living entity. And he says that is archana, meaning the worship of the Lord. And what is not beneficial is clear. Those activities that are materially motivated. Now, in the purport, Prabhupada quotes three verses spoken by Prahlad Maharaj that were very dear to Srila Prabhupada, beginning with Matirna Krishna Paratak Svatova, and then Nateva Dus Vatagatimi Vishnu, and then Naisham Matis Tavaradukram Ramangrim. So he translates those verses in a very sweet and pertinent way, showing how the materialistic people turn from Krishna because of their attachments, and what can they do about that? I'll read those three translations. Persons who are determined, this is Matirna Krishna Paratak Svatova, persons who are determined to totally rot in material happiness. Maybe you can turn them down a bit. Now that's not exactly how people who are materialistically inclined think of themselves. But actually that is their situation. They are very determined to have material happiness. Although practically, if they would think for 1 minute about it, they would understand that it is not real happiness, but it is temporary happiness, and they're going to rot in it. Does that sound like a heavy condemnation? They're going to rot in it? No, it's very accurate, because the main thing we are in, that we are rotting in, is the material body. And if anyone thinks that they are not rotting in their material body, make the scientific experiment of not bathing for a month and see if they, first of all, they will feel rotten, but their body will have rotted so much that they will smell terrible. So yes, they're determined to totally rot in false material happiness due to identification of the body with the body. Very determined about it. And these people cannot become Krishna-minded either by instructions from teachers, by self-realization, or by parliamentary discussions. They are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest region of ignorance, and thus they madly engage in what is called chewing the chewed. Madly engaged. Why madly engaged? Because Everyone knows that when the sugar cane, after the sweetness is taken out and is spitted out, there's no more sweetness in it. So a mad person will pick it up expecting to find sweetness there. But that is the engagement of materialistic people. Second verse. Because of their foolish activities, because of their being determinedly engaged in this way, they are unaware that the ultimate goal of human life is to achieve Vishnu, the Lord of the cosmic manifestation. And so their struggle for existence is in the wrong direction of material civilization. So everyone is struggling. The devotee struggles, the materialist struggles. But the devotee struggles in one direction, and the materialist struggles in the opposite direction. This is the struggle of the materialist, to make a situation that is favorable in the material world and it is doomed. They are led by similar foolish persons, just as one blind man is led by another blind man, and both fall into a ditch. Third verse. How can they be helped? Such foolish men cannot be attracted towards the activities of the Supreme Powerful, who is actually the neutralizing measure for their foolish activities. He will stop their foolish activities unless and until they have the good sense to be guided by the great souls who are completely freed from material attachment. Next verse. So that was actually explaining the time factor, that people turn their back on Krishna and good advice of Krishna, and they are placed under the crushing force of material time. Your Lordship, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are indefatigable time, unstoppable and tiring time, and the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Although I am situated in an abode which will continue to exist for a time duration of 2 paradas, very long time, although I am the leader of all other planets in the universe, and although I have undergone many, many years of penance for self-realization, still I offer my obeisances to you, the Lord. O my Lord, by your own will you will appear in the various species of living entities, among animals lower than human beings as well as amongst the demigods, to perform your transcendental pastimes. You are not affected by material contamination. However you appear, it is always transcendental, regardless of the form. You come just to fulfill the obligations of your own principle of religion. And therefore, O Supreme Personality, I offer my obeisances unto you for manifesting such different forms. Now, from 20 to 25, Lord Brahma begins, after offering obeisances and glorifying the Lord, as he did, he begins to make his request. It takes him a little bit of time. It takes him these 6 verses till he makes his request to the Lord. My Lord, you accept the pleasure of sleeping in the water of devastation, where there are violent waves, and you enjoy pleasure on the bed of snakes, showing the happiness of your sleep to intelligent persons. At that time, all the universal planets are situated, stationed within your abdomen. Everything is within him during the sleep. 21. O object of my worship, I am born from the house of your lotus navel for the purpose of creating the universe by your mercy. All these planets of the universe were stationed within your transcendental abdomen while you were enjoying sleep. Now, your sleep having ended, your eyes are open like blossoming lotuses in the morning. It's So he's looking at the Lord, he can see the Lord, and he sees that it is time for the creation to begin, and the Lord has opened his eyes. And he's saying, the purpose, all the living entities are within you. 22. Let the Supreme Lord be merciful to me. He is the one friend and soul of all living entities in the world. Suridam Savabhutanam. And he maintains all for their ultimate happiness by his six transcendental opulences. May he be merciful towards me, so that I, as before, may be empowered with the introspection to create, for I am also one of the surrendered souls who are dear to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Lord, Purushottam, or Sri Krishna, is the maintainer of all in both the transcendental and material worlds. He is the life and friend of all, because there is eternally natural affection and love between the living entities and the Lord. He is the one friend and well-wisher for all, and he is one without a second. The Lord maintains all the living entities everywhere by his six transcendental opulences, for which he is known as Bhagawan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma prayed for his mercy, so that he might be able to create the universal affairs as he did before, because this was a partial devastation. And only by the Lord's causeless mercy could he create both material and spiritual personalities like Marichi and Narada respectively. But he's very much dear to the surrendered soul. The surrendered soul knows nothing but the Lord, and therefore the Lord is very affectionate towards him. This is an important sentence. The surrendered soul knows nothing but the Lord, and therefore the Lord is very affectionate towards him. Now he's going to ask... He said in that verse, I want to please empower me so I can create. And now, something a little further, there is a point that he's afraid of in doing this service. Even though he's asking the Lord for the ability to do the service, but still he's afraid. This is what he says. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, is always the benefactor of the surrendered souls. His activities are always enacted through his internal potency, Rama, or the goddess of fortune. I pray only to engage in his service in the creation of the material world, and I pray that I may not be materially affected by my works, for thus I may be able to give up the false prestige of being the creator. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Brahma, who is only an assistant in the modes of creation, wanted to remain in his actual position as an instrument of the Lord instead of becoming puffed up by the false prestige of thinking himself the creator. That is the way of becoming dear to the Supreme Lord and receiving his benediction. Foolish men want to take credit for all creations made by them, but intelligent persons know very well that not a blade of grass can move without the will of the Lord, and thus all the credit for wonderful creations must go to him, the Lord. By spiritual consciousness only can one be free from the contamination of material affection and receive the benedictions offered by the Lord. So he wants... to do the service, but he doesn't want to think that he is the one doing it. He wants to be instrumental and conscious of the fact that he's instrumental of Krishna doing it. Now, we'll read the next verse and then the next purport where Prabhupada explains some very important. He brings this point down to us aspiring devotees. The Lord's potencies, Brahma says, are innumerable. As he lies down in the water of devastation, I am born. I am born as the total universal energy from the navel lake in which the lotus sprouts. I am now engaged in manifesting his diverse energies in the form of the cosmic manifestation. I therefore pray that in the course of my material activities, I may not be deviated from the vibration of the Vedic hymns. I'll just read the last verse. And then we'll read that purport to 24. The Lord, who is supreme and is the oldest of all, is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benedictions upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kindly speaking his direction. So please, Lord, please tell me what to do in the creation of the universe. Here's Prabhupada's purport to 24. So his desire is to serve, but he wants to do it properly. He wants actually the Lord to do it through him. And as we heard when in a previous purport by Prabhupada about preaching, that the Lord can do it himself, but he wants the devotee to become glorified. So therefore the devotee gets the credit. So that's the way that it works through the doing of transcendental service. That the devotee doesn't want any credit. He doesn't want to do it. He wants Krishna to do it through him. And he wants to give all credit to the Lord. But on the other hand, the Lord doesn't want to take any credit. He wants all the credit of the work wonderfully done given to his pure devotee. This is transcendental reciprocation that's described. Here's Prabhupada's purport, which explains how we can become or adopt the mood of a devotee, an actual devotee, and attract Krishna's mercy towards us. Prabhupada's purport. Every person engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord in this material world is prone to so many material activities. Well, we usually don't think in that way. Every person engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord in this material world, this is the nature of the material world, every person is prone to so many material activities. And if one is not strong enough to protect himself against the onslaught of material affection, he may be diverted from the spiritual energy. In the material creation, Brahma has to create all kinds of living entities with bodies suitable to their material conditions. Brahma wants to be protected by the Lord because he has to contact many, many vicious living entities. An ordinary Brahmana may fall down from the Brahma Tejas, or the power of Brahminical excellence, due to his association with many fallen conditioned souls. Brahma, as the supermost Brahmana, is afraid of such a fall down, and therefore he prays to the Lord for protection. This is a warning for one and all in the spiritual advancement of life. Unless one is sufficiently protected by the Lord, he may fall down from his spiritual position. Therefore, one has to pray constantly to the Lord for protection and the blessings to carry out one's duty. Lord Chaitanya also entrusted his missionary work to his devotees and assured them of his protection against the onslaught of material affection. The path of spiritual life is stated in the Vedas to be like the edge of a sharpened razor. A little inattentiveness may at once create havoc and bloodshed. But one who is a completely surrendered soul, always seeking protection from the Lord in the discharge of his entrusted duties, has no fear of falling into material contamination. Prabhupada explains, I'll just read a little bit of the end of the purport to 25. The liberated soul... I'm going to read the whole purport. The Lord is ever increasingly merciful upon the fallen souls of this material world. The whole cosmic manifestation is a chance for all to improve themselves in devotional service to the Lord, and everyone is meant for that purpose. The Lord expands Himself into many personalities who are either self-expansions or separated expansions. The personalities of the individual souls are His separated expansions, whereas the self-expansions are the Lord Himself. The self-expansions are predominators, and the separated expansions are predominated for reciprocation of transcendental bliss with the supreme form of bliss and knowledge. The liberated souls can join in this blissful reciprocation of predominator and predominated without materially concocted ideas. The typical example of such a transcendental exchange between the predominator and the predominated is the Lord's Rasalila with the gopis. The gopis are predominated expansions of the internal potency, and therefore the Lord's participation in the Rasalila dance is never to be considered like the mundane relationship of man and woman. It is rather the highest perfectional stage of the exchange of feelings between the Lord and the living entities. The Lord gives the fallen souls the chance for this highest perfection of life. Lord Brahma is entrusted with the management of the complete cosmic show, and therefore he prays that the Lord bestow his blessings upon him, so that he may execute its purpose. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai. Okay, we'll see. Yes. Yes.
The first question is, what happens to devotees who have material desire?
Did
you call
them sakkam? Sakkam. Sakkam means, sa means with and kam means desire. So the Krishna will satisfy their desire, two things. If he's pleased with them, he'll satisfy their desires. But he'll do it in such a way that they'll gradually become purified. But if he's really pleased with them, oh, I don't even want to tell you what he does to them. It'll frighten you. He takes everything away and leaves them with nothing. Beggars, hopeless, depending only on him. Harisha Tadaram Sarai. So you want Krishna to be pleased with you, or you want Krishna to be really pleased with you? Yes, you do. You have to be... One has to be really ready for anything. If you want Krishna to be really pleased with you, really, really pleased with you, you have to be ready to accept whatever happens as Krishna's mercy. Huh? Yeah, can do that. That's if he's pleased with you. So, but he does it in such a way that gradually the devotees are purified and they come to. Are you eating your pen now? Because. Anyway, I feel the same way. It's not only you. Don't worry about it. Yes.
Okay. Okay. So, when a devotee has problems in Krishna consciousness, is that Krishna's mercy, or is it the devotee's illusion?
Is that the two alternatives, or maybe there's a third
alternative?
Yeah. See what. If you say if an aspiring devotee is having problems becoming an actual devotee, that's probably more accurate. Okay. Then is that Krishna's mercy? You're asking then?
Yes.
Well, how can an aspiring devotee who is not yet a devotee, who has material desires, who wants to become a devotee, not be having problems? Because he wants something and there are obstacles to him getting that thing. So he's climbing the obstacles, so how could he not have problems? Some aspiring devotees. No. But we only see a short time period. Because, what they've gained forever. That they don't make it? Or that they're trying to climb over the obstacles and it's not easy? It's Krishna's mercy that they're trying, and there's different ways to look at it. There, you can see the obstacles and say the problem is their material desires. That's one way to look at it. Or you can look at it another way and say they're trying to climb the obstacles inspired by Krishna, and the obstacles are like tests that unless they're removed. Or climbed over, then they can't get to where they're going. So because they're there, they're not there by Krishna's mercy. Krishna hasn't put the material blockages there. That's not Krishna's mercy. But when the devotee is trying to remove them, or Krishna is making it apparent to them that it's an obstacle, or Krishna is making the struggle very real for them, you can say from another point of view that that's Krishna's mercy. Anyone else like to also say something about this? And you also. Oh. Were you going to answer? You want to add something? that's enough impetus to become a Mahabhagavat, isn't it? There's no Maya for a Mahabhagavat. At the point of Bhava, there's no more. Really, there's no more Maya. Because one has gained the shelter of the internal energy more permanently. One has gained it. Now, we're in the glue of the external energy, we're sheltered by the external energy. We're tiny and in glue, and we're trying to get free from that, to get to the other side, to get into the light of Krishna's mercy. So the Mahabhagavat and that glue is Maya. So we're trying to get out. So that's Krishna's mercy, and Krishna helps, and that's Krishna's mercy. And Krishna has the Maya is also Krishna's mercy, because that's what we want. We don't want to give ourselves fully to Him, or we sometimes want to. Wait. Well, isn't that His mercy? Yeah, but do we want to take His real mercy is the question. We want to take it, but we don't want to let go. I mean, I'm not saying this just theoretically. It's like I'm holding this and I want to pick that up, but not enough to let go of this. I can't do it. So you have so which do you do first? You know, we try to because we're saying that if I can pick this up, then I'll trust it enough to put this down. But you can't pick it up to ever know, practically speaking. So therefore it takes a lot of faith and trust. You know, Okay.
Well,
that's good.
Does he really want to surrender? So does he listen to those parts as well?
Or do you mean, does he only listen to the parts where you really don't want to surrender? What do you think? Ask him. But sometimes when we want him to listen to us, we want him to listen to us like a submissive husband and do whatever we want. But he's not always like that. I told you to get me out of this mire. You haven't done it yet. You're 5 minutes late. Take out the garbage. Maya parete abhimukhe cha balajamanam. That Maya cannot stand before Krishna. So when we're in Krishna, in the way that Prabhupada said, just always, 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 always praying and depending on Krishna and asking His mercy, then there is no question of Maya. Just like if we're facing the sun, where is the shadow? Where is our shadow? We can't see it, but if we have a back to the sun, then all we see is shadow. Maya is the shadow, like that. Okay. No easy answers. There's easy answers. But once we gain the shelter of the internal energy, actually become devotees, then everything is automatic because everything happens by the mercy of the internal, by Krishna's potency, internal potency. Now everything happens by the mercy of the external potency, that Maya, Mahamaya. But slowly, slowly, dire, 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 dire. Step by step, slowly, slowly. And you're not alone. You have others to help you. You have others who are somewhat ahead, others more ahead, others more ahead, others a little behind. So help others. Take help from others.